Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Graddick, your host. Delighted to be with you this morning. They actually allowed me to come back, which is kind of amazing. But I'm back, and I will be here next Monday, and then I will be on a leave of absence. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you to our great sponsor, Tanner Health System. And it's a whole nother week of Community Voice. So with that said, it's a great pleasure to introduce to you our guest this morning, Jason Swindle. He's a criminal defense attorney, swindlelaw.com, if you'd like to learn more. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Glad that you were able to make it in. We've got, I think, a very special show today because we've got three important topics that we're going to run through. So I'm not going to go into a long intro of our good friend Jason. Just suffice it to say, a criminal defense attorney, swindlelaw.com. Check him out. One thing, I think our three topics is we're going to talk about district attorney. We're going to talk about the new cell phone bill that's going to be enacted July 1st. And then we're going to talk about attorney-client privilege in each of our three segments. So let's start out. There's been a lot of news stories of late about our circuit, about and it just struck me, and you'd written a piece in one of your columns regarding the district attorney, but it just struck me that most people, and I'm included in this, don't have a good or deep understanding of the office of DA, what it's about, and its purpose, its role. I mean, we tend to vote for a DA, but this year it looks like Herb Cranford is not going to be challenged.
Correct.
So he's going to be our new DA following Pete Scandalakis. But just give us a DA 101 type of overview. You being a criminal defense attorney, I guess you're on the other side of the spectrum there.
Well, the other side sometimes, but we also work together.
Okay. How's that work?
Well, let me start by saying that Mr. Scandalakis served for 20-plus years. So he's the only DA I have known in the Coweta Judicial Circuit, which has five counties. And after a long stint of service, he decided to take a position with PAC, which is the Prosecuting Attorney's Council. He's actually the executive director. So he retired during the early part of his term, which under state law, the governor is to appoint the next DA. And to make a long story short, there were candidates who interviewed, and John Herbert Cranford Jr. Was the individual who was chosen by Governor Deal to be the next DA, and is the DA now. I've known Mr. Cranford, call him Herb sometimes, for many years. He's the exact age that Pete was when Pete took over the district attorney's position in our circuit. And I think that we're very, well, we should be very grateful to have Herb as our DA today. He's a hard worker. He's a very intelligent young man. And he's actually a third-generation prosecutor. So he has prosecution in his blood, as you might say. But your original question was, what does the DA do? Do they protect us? Do they put as many people in prison as they possibly can? It's very simple. The district attorney is to do this: seek justice. Now that sounds simple, but justice to me is not necessarily what justice is to you in an individual case. So with the DA wielding so much power, that person has to be very careful, very thoughtful, when deciding what to do with the case, punishment versus treatment.
How does the term constitutional officer intertwine with all of this? What does that mean in regards to being a DA?
Well, it just means that he's a constitutional officer, just like the sheriff, just like a number of other positions, the governor.
But that reflects the level of independence from...
Exactly. Okay. In fact, he has more discretion, I would say, than superior court judges do by far. Because he can choose to either prosecute somebody, not prosecute somebody. He can choose to dismiss cases. He can choose to put the full power of the state behind his prosecution and look towards putting, for example, a violent criminal in prison for the rest of their lives, which Mr. Cranford did just a few weeks ago in Carroll County.
What counties are make up this judicial circuit? Because I know there always been some talk that there were too many counties.
Well, that's a matter of opinion. I'll keep that to myself this morning. But the five counties are, and I'll start from the north, we have Carroll County, Coweta County, Heard County, Meriwether County, and Troop County. It is a very large area. It's about 100 miles north to south. It's close to being the size of some congressional districts.
So, obviously, this one DA, one human being, can't cover all that. So, he must have a pretty large staff.
Well, he has a very large staff. I believe 60-plus employees.
Wow.
He has a number of assistant district attorneys. But Mr. Cranford also travels to each office. He makes it a point that he is seen in each county because he represents the people of each county. I've actually seen him in Carroll County maybe five times since he was sworn in by Governor Deal.
So, but it's not just, well, you say it's, his role is to seek justice, but there are many ways to do that. It's not just by bringing charges against criminals and prosecuting them, right?
That's correct. I'll give you a good example. We have one individual who is addicted to drugs, and he keeps getting arrested over and over and over for a small amount of drugs that are felonies. Then we have somebody like Mr. Thornton, who was prosecuted by Mr. Cranford a few weeks ago, who was alleged to have stabbed his girlfriend 50-plus times. Okay, those are two ends of the spectrum. Justice is different in both cases. In the first case, the district attorney's office in the Coweta Circuit is going to help that person. They will be on the same side as the defense attorney. In the second situation, justice might be for the DA to put that person in prison for the rest of his life, which is what happened with Mr. Thornton in Carroll County.
Okay, but before we go to this break, I mean, you're speaking in very complimentary, high terms of the DA's office, but as a criminal defense attorney, there will be situations where you could come head-to-head with them, correct?
Well, not maybe, but there definitely will.
Yeah.
There has been, there will be in the future. But I have found that Mr. Cranford, Mr. Hunt, Ms. Allen, the district attorneys and ADAs who I deal with, we can fight hard in the courtroom. When we walk out of the courtroom, the professionalism stays with us and we can shake hands.
Our guest this morning is Jason Swindle, criminal defense attorney. Our first segment was DA 101. Hopefully you found that somewhat enlightening. Come back and we're going to talk about hands-free cell phone usage and how my life is going to change after July 1st. After this word from Tanner Health System.
At Tanner, we're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama, because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at Tanner.org or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-4000. care.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Graddick, your host on this beautiful, absolutely beautiful Monday morning. Anyway, we've got a three-part program this morning with Jason Swindle, criminal defense attorney, swindlelaw.com. Part number two, we're going to talk about House Bill 673. Now, that's hands-free cell phone use passed the House and the Senate. Our good friend Jay Collins voted for it, and our good friend Kevin Cook voted against it. I haven't spoken with Mr. Cook, but if I had to guess, my guess is that he voted against it because he felt like it was just simply an overreach of government to reach down into the cars and trucks of individuals and have law enforcement say, hey, you know, you punched too many buttons on that cell phone. How do you see it, Mr. Swindle? Is this an overreach of government, or is this just good common sense protect the driver stuff?
Well, I think that's a good educated guess as to why Kevin voted against this. And I'm a libertarian / conservative too, and I certainly understand his thinking. But I have to go with Jay Collins on this. I think this is a safety provision. I find myself distracted in the vehicle by a number of different things. And the cell phone is one of the most distracting things in our lives. Now, for us to become hands-free, quote-unquote, by July 1st is going to be a significant change in the way that we behave in our vehicles. I'm actually working on becoming hands-free now, which I'm not yet. I'm not there. But the bill changes what we do significantly, and I anticipate there will be many, many more traffic stops than there are right now, which can lead to other things.
Yeah, elaborate on that. So, because that's really a sidebar to my next question is, how do you inspect law enforcement with all that they have to do to keep an eye on whether or not we've got our cell phone in our hand, or if it's, synced into the dash, or we have Bluetooth? How do you expect law enforcement to really enforce this? Is this an unenforceable piece of legislation?
Well, I spoke with the GBI agent about 3 weeks ago regarding that exact question. He told me that the current law is almost unenforceable.
Uh-oh.
Because you can't tell if somebody's texting. You can't tell if somebody's just picking their phone up and moving it. Here, under the House bill, you can't touch your phone and communicate at the same time.
But you can touch your phone one time to start it and then one time to stop it.
That is correct. I'm looking at a column that I wrote last month regarding hands-free, and actually holding or supporting with any part of the body a wireless telecommunications device or standalone electronic device like a smartphone would be unlawful. So that's a pretty broad provision of the law, and that's something that I'm going to look into a lot closer, because after all, you do have to start your phone,
right?
And you do have to turn it down.
Well, it doesn't say anything about turning it down. It does say, quote, use more than a single button on a wireless telecommunications device to initiate or terminate a voice communication. So that's allowable. But you're as a criminal defense attorney, you're going to be facing cases where this is an issue now, where there can be a fatality or not in the accident, and it's going to be charged that somehow they were in violation of this new law.
Well, right now, if there's an accident, what an officer will typically do if they believe that texting and driving was the cause is they'll ask the passenger, can I look at your phone? And if they give consent, they can obviously see when the last text message was sent. If they do not get consent, oftentimes they will get a warrant, or they'll get the records from Verizon or whatever company they use for their telecommunication needs. Now, they'll do the same thing. However, it will be a lot easier, in my opinion, for a law enforcement officer to make a determination in his mind or her mind that somebody is violating this law just by the movement of the hands with a cell phone touching it.
Well, is that really the only way they're going to be able to tell? In other words, they just got to see it?
Yes. They'll have to see it. Now, a lot of us are used to talking on the phone with our hand to the ear, right?
Right.
I do that all the time.
Right.
That's a habit that's going to be hard to break.
Right.
So how long will it take us to break our bad habits? It may take getting pulled over once or twice. It just may take time for us to get used to it.
Now, the penalties apparently are monetary.
They are, and they're very minor.
So, but now if you got somebody who's got tinted windows or almost tinted windows, it's sometimes hard to see in there to see whether they're on the cell phone or not.
Well, if their tinted windows are too dark, they're going to get pulled over anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to your first comment. You said you're predicting more traffic roadblocks than general traffic stops than what we're used to. How would that work, and how do we respond to that?
Not necessarily roadblocks, but I anticipate there will be many more traffic stops just based on officers looking at motorists, people not being able to acclimate themselves to the new law very quickly. And as I said, the penalties are rather minor, but as I've seen a number of times, when somebody's pulled over for speeding, that can sometimes lead to very serious charges.
Of course, the proponents of this legislation, and I'm sorry I don't have the numbers in front of me, cite increase in traffic fatalities in Georgia the last couple of years, and they attribute that to cell phone usage while driving. Is that a reasonable argument obviously you said at the beginning you support the legislation.
I believe that's a reasonable argument. As I said, I agree with Jay Collins and the others who voted for it, and I think there will be less fatalities in the future. And if we can make our roads safer without being too intrusive, then I think that's a win-win for individuals and our state.
Before we conclude this second segment, let's just briefly mention, and you had alluded to it, if you're pulled over, there's an accident, the law enforcement can look at your phone, they can get a warrant. How far can they go with that, and how do we respond? Do we say, well, I'm sorry, sir, you'll need to get a warrant before I give you my phone, or...
That's a two-hour conversation, so let me try to sum it up here. I don't have anything to hide, but I'm not the type of person who's going to give consent under any circumstances, because I like the Fourth Amendment a lot. It's an individual's choice whether they want to provide the phone to law enforcement, but I advise my clients not to provide anything. And to allow me to handle speaking with law enforcement if I need to. But if law enforcement believes that the phone or that there was probable cause that a crime was committed and the phone was part of it, then they can get a search warrant for the contents of the phone, send that to the company, such as Verizon, and they could obtain the records that show when that last text was sent.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. That's part number two, and House Bill 673, expected to be signed by the governor July 1st, so be ready. We're going to come back and we'll talk about a very important issue that affects all of us, which is attorney-client privilege, and we're going to do that after this word from Tanner Health System.
At Tanner, we're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama. Because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at tanner.org or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-CARE.
Good morning. Welcome back to Community Voice. I'm Steve Graddick, your host. Grateful to Tanner Health System for sticking with us all these years and being a sponsor of this show. And we thank you most of all for listening. We have Jason Swindle in studio. It's we got like three parts on Community Voice, and we're up to part number three. Obviously, the news in recent weeks was dominated in part by the situation regarding Michael Cohen, attorney for President Trump. And the term surfaced quite often in that reporting about attorney-client privilege. And it really made me want to ask some questions and started me thinking about, well, how far does attorney-client privilege go? And it doesn't go all the way. There are limitations to that. So I contract with an attorney, and supposedly our communication is privileged. Well, not necessarily. What are the limitations to attorney-client privilege?
Well, the attorney-client privilege is probably the most important privilege that an American has. When you speak to your attorney, you need to speak openly and freely about anything and everything, because your attorney cannot function properly if he or she knows 99% of the truth. It's got to be 100. So there is not a blanket attorney-client privilege, but it's pretty close. One of the examples that is often used to explain a circumstance when it is not applicable would be this. Let's say that you come into my office, Steve, and you say, Jason, I'm in a really bad mood, really angry with this guy down the street, and I've got this 9mm in my pocket, and I'm about to go kill him, but you have a good day and have supper with your wife, okay? And you walk out of the office. That is not privileged, because you have just told me you're about to commit a crime. So I would have a duty to call law enforcement under those circumstances. However, if you told me, Jason, I've been arrested for murder, I got angry one day, and I went and shot Mr. X down the road, just wanted to let you know that, defend me and get me out of this, thank you, okay? That would be privileged information and communication, because that already happened. It's not something you're about to do, but it already happened.
Okay. So it's simply a timing issue?
In this example, it is, yes.
But there got to be other examples whereby it's not a timing issue. I mean,
well, there are a few examples.
So gentleman is charged with murder, but in that defense of him, you find out that he has a connection to a previous murder. Mm-hmm. And which a case is a cold case, and now you know that there's here new information this dude has shared with you that could reopen that other case and possibly put him on trial for the murder of this other person. So what do you do with that information? Nothing? You just sit on it?
Well, I'm not an investigator, and I'm not a prosecutor, so actually I would be doing my client a disservice by bringing that information to the attention of law enforcement. Now, some people don't like to hear that, but that is what the State Bar of Georgia requires. We have to follow their rules. And thankfully, that's never come up before, and I hope it never does.
Because I guess at that point, it's like a matter of conscience. But then if you're bound by the state bar and the duties of your profession, then you don't act on that information.
That's true. And like I said, I'm grateful that's not happened before.
Right, right. Okay, so it sounds like you made the statement at the beginning, which kind of shocked me, that this is the most important freedom or the most important right that we have is this attorney-client privilege. But elaborate a little more on that. I mean,
well, I think I said it's the most important communication privilege that we have.
Right.
There are other privileges too. You have the physician-patient privilege,
sure,
which is somewhat limited. If you're seeing your doctor for a diagnosis, for instance, then mm-hmm. HIPAA would apply.
Sure.
If you're seeing a doctor for purposes regarding the legal system, like competency or sanity, there is no privilege there. But the attorney-client privilege is almost absolute.
So,
almost.
Oh, what other exceptions besides, you know, a crime that's about to be committed?
Okay.
What would be other exceptions?
Let's say that you come in and you went to Walmart and Steve Graddick just had to have a pair of shoes and he didn't have any money and so he just ran out of there. Well, if you steal from Walmart, you're going to get caught every time.
I ran out of there with a pair of shoes.
You did. Okay. You did. Misdemeanor shoplifting, uh-huh. And you're on the front page and everything.
So right, all the camera shots.
Exactly.
Very embarrassing.
You're apologizing, explaining, you know.
Colin's doing a lead story on it. It's terrible.
Yeah, I know. Hmm. Well, you come to me and you say, yeah, you know, I did this, but. And then you say, but you better not talk to my wife about this because she lives in Washington, and she doesn't know about it. Now, guess what? I can't talk to your wife about that, okay? That privilege stops me from discussing this with anybody other than the people you give me permission to talk to.
Huh.
And so that's not necessarily an exception, but it's another explanation of how the attorney-client privilege extends itself.
So it's pretty hardcore.
It is. It is. And attorneys are held to a high standard when it comes to the attorney-client privilege. If we violate that, we can be punished or reprimanded by the State Bar of Georgia and the Supreme Court.
Huh. So it sounds like Michael Cohen is in a pretty safe spot in terms of being forced to testify, et cetera.
Well, I don't know that he is in a safe spot. I do know that it is utterly outrageous for the Department of Justice to raid a sitting president's personal attorney's office with not only President Trump's files, but files of many other people contained therein. It is rare that any law firm is ever raided, and this is probably the most egregious example I've seen in history.
Jason Swindle, our guest this morning, and thank you for coming in.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
Steve.
I enjoy having three parts, and they were all good. Of course, we had some questions that we weren't able to get to, and hopefully we'll have you back soon, and we'll get to them, and we thank you for listening, and that's swindlelaw.com. Look it up. Reach out to Jason if you need him or have any further questions, and we thank you for listening to the Community Voice here on WLBB Carrollton.